You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hello and welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name is Caitlin Durante.
My name is Jamie Loftus.
And it's your birthday episode, Jamie.
Birthday episode. I'm so excited. Oh, and boy, do we have my favorite movie of all time for you today.
Wow.
So, what we are doing today on the Bechdel cast, and we will get you up to speed. If you've never listened before, welcome. It's my birthday. We're going to tell you what the podcast is about in a second. But for returning listeners, we are unlocking an episode from our Patreon, aka Matreon, back from 2018.
Yeah, early 2018.
Which, as we'll discuss, was in a way 5,000 years ago. but yeah, it's an episode about I, Tonya, one of my faves. And so if you're not a member of the Matreon, this will be your first time. And if you also, if you're not a member of the Matreon, you know, think about joining us.
It's a great little space for everybody.
A beautiful community. But yes, it is I, Tonya Day on the cast. But first, we have to tell everybody what our podcast is about, because we don't do that in Patreon episodes.
If you're on the Matreon, you already know what you're
know,
getting into.
You know. But this, but on the main feed, we have to be respectful of the fact that maybe it's your first time here because you're just an I, Tonya stan, and you couldn't help but click. So
true. So what we do on the Bechdel cast is examine film through an intersectional feminist lens, focusing on the representation of women, but extending the conversation further to other topics. And we use the Bechdel test as a just inspiration.
A jumping off point.
Yeah.
If you will.
And that is a media metric created by queer cartoonist Alison Bechdel, sometimes called the Bechdel-Wallace test. And it requires that, for our purposes, our version of the test, that two people of any marginalized gender, they have to have names, they have to speak to each other about something other than a man for at least two lines of dialogue.
Let's try it.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. Hey, Caitlin.
Yes, Jamie?
Do you ever feel like in a biopic, you're like, this biopic is so amazing, and then you learn about the subject of the biopic and you're like, oh, geez.
Yes, I have done that before, especially when the biopic is about a woman.
It makes you think.
And then it passes the Bechdel test. Yeah.
Doesn't have to be perfect. Doesn't have to make sense. Just really some bare minimum stuff. Most movies don't do it. You will not be shocked to know this movie is an exception.
It's true.
But yes, so we are going to get the episode started up. We're going to kind of cut you in at the recap, right?
Yeah, slightly before the recap. Yeah. So what I was thinking, because since we've recorded this...
2.5 years.
2.5 years ago, right. So a little peek behind the curtain, everyone. We recorded this early 2018. Mm-hmm. It was when we were still recording our Patreon episodes on my iPhone in my bed.
This was the one that was on your iPhone. Pre-COVID, they were all in your bed, but not all on your mm-hmm. iPhone. There's a clear timeline if you're on the Patreon.
Right. The early Patreon episodes we recorded on my iPhone. So the sound quality, it's not bad, but if it doesn't sound top notch, that is why.
It was early days in the Patreon.
Yes. Then we upgraded to some fancier equipment. But yes. In any case, so that if you're like, this doesn't sound as good as it normally does, that's why. Also, before we jump into the episode, we wanted to address something that we have had the habit of doing in the past, but we've become more aware of this thing that we're doing, and we have been phasing it out. And what it is the use of certain phrases or just certain language that is disparaging of mental illness and is ableist. And what we mean by that is we use in this episode and others past phrases mm-hmm. like, oh, that's crazy, or mm-hmm. that's insane, or
etc. From that line of thinking.
Yes. This is still very common language that a lot of people use, and we would encourage you to try to scale back on it, get rid of it, not include that in your language anymore, because like we said, it is disparaging of mental illness and is ableist.
Yes.
So.
And so if you are interested, we will leave some links in the notes of this episode in case you have any questions about certain words, uses of words. We want to educate our listeners just as our listeners have educated us. These are words that have since been worked out of the show and our lives, and we hope to continue to do better. Mm-hmm. And you know, if these are still words in your daily rotation, there are so many wonderful substitutes. That's the thing about words. You don't need to use words that are disparaging to people, because guess what? There's other words.
It's true. Synonyms exist.
So we wanted to acknowledge that as well.
Ooh, and another thing we want to be better about doing moving forward is to include content warnings for episodes in which we discuss topics that are sensitive and potentially triggering.
Yeah.
So in this episode, we'd like to include a content warning regarding our discussion of physical and emotional abuse. So there's that. And
we also wanted to update our history with the movie, because we recorded this episode just a couple months, I mean like two maybe months after this movie came out. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the movie has like whatever, eight-tupled in age since we talked about it. Eight-tupled. That's not even accurate, but whatever.
Close enough.
It's older. It's much older.
Right. And especially your relationship with it, Jamie, has grown and gotten more special.
It's grown and deepened, yeah.
So for me, I mean, we both saw the movie in theaters a couple times. I really enjoyed it. I haven't watched it, though, since we recorded the episode, aside from when I rewatched it a couple days ago, because I knew we were doing this episode and wanted to refresh my memory. But for you, Jamie, so you're releasing this as your birthday episode because it's become such an important movie for you. So tell us about that.
I guess when this movie came out, I knew it was one of my favorite movies already because I saw it 9 times in theaters, which I have never done before and never did since. This episode / this movie came out during this wonderful time where MoviePass was a thing that worked and it actually cost $10. And so the only thing I used my MoviePass for was to see I, Tonya 9 times, and then I unsubscribed and then MoviePass imploded and no one has heard from her since. But so I saw this movie 9 times within 2 months, I think. I just loved it. There is like... I've always been very attached to the Tonya Harding myth, basically. It's a culture, you know, an American myth at this point.
Mm-hmm.
My first cartoon I ever made was about Tanya Harding.
I remember that.
Really, it was like, yeah, it was forever ago, but I really always attached, I'm sure I talk about it in the episode too, but I was always very attached to her, just kind of as like someone who came from like the lower middle class. I think Tanya came up from even lower class than I was from, but I just was really, mm-hmm. It really spoke to me how determined she was and how she didn't take shit from people and kind mm-hmm. of how that attitude results in being punished by the culture that you live in, especially at the time that she was skating. And I think the movie is so well done. It's written mm-hmm. and directed by a man, and yet I like it. And
sometimes men don't do horrible work. Who
they
knew?
They really figured it out this time. I I rewatched this movie last week, and I still love it so much. It makes me cry a lot. It's the only time I've ever been impressed by Sebastian Stan. Margot Robbie's at her best. I think it is such a fun and engaging movie that manages to make, I think, like, takes a lot of very serious topics and treats them with the weight and the respect they deserve, but also don't make it like a depression experience. I think it's still like a super engaging and fun movie. And mm-hmm. after the last time I saw this movie in a theater, I was seeing this movie in theaters as late as July 2018.
Wow.
Because I think you'll remember this when I say it, is because they did a rooftop screening of I, Tanya in downtown Los Angeles, and Tanya Harding was there.
Yes.
And it's here that I wanted to just acknowledge, because it's just interesting, I guess, of like, I mean, obviously never meet your heroes, but this one stung a little. Like,
oh.
Tanya Harding, very sweet, but she gave kind of like some opening statements, and I actually mm-hmm. I'm gonna cite myself here. I wrote a piece about it at the time for Paste magazine.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Called Falling Out of Love with Tanya Harding, and that kind of says what I'm saying now. Just like, Tanya Harding was a kind of a hero of mine, and mm-hmm. like, she overcame so much and was like, you know, maintained her dignity through a really difficult experience. But then when you hear her talk about her political views, you're like, oh, uh-oh. Dear. She didn't get explicitly into her political views in that, but there was enough. There was some bat signaling to some things I really don't agree with.
Uh-oh.
And it, I mean, and I'm sure like our listeners, everyone at some point in their life realizes that you have to idolize the idea and the message and not the person. But this was one of those moments for me where I was just like, ugh, I wanted to agree with Tanya Harding on everything. I wanted her to have like views that I aligned with, but simply wasn't the way it went. But I still really love the movie. I feel like it is just my favorite movie ever. I watch it all mm-hmm. the time. I watch it to fall asleep. I watch it to call, like, I just, it's my movie. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think with that, we can just launch into
the
unlocked episode. You know, in a movie when they do like kind of like,
call that effect?
It's like a transition. It's like a ripple, like a like the ripple effect, like the dream, like the flashback. Kind of. It's
in TV
imagine
a lot.
That. Whatever the audio version of that is,
So, okay. I, Tanya is, if you are not aware, is the new Tanya Harding biopic starring Margot Robbie as Tanya Harding and Allison Janney as Tanya Harding's mother and a guy from Gossip Girl as Jeff Galooly, hot.
Oh, yeah.
Jeff Galooly, hot in this movie, distracting, can't deal with it.
And I'm very upset that I think he's hot because
I know
how
his character's
horrible his character is.
And as a person, he's a horrible person. And real life Jeff Galooly, not hot. Basically everyone real life in this story, not hot. But it's a movie, so hot. sorry, I just explained how movies worked. Like regular, but like way hotter. So it's about the 1994 Olympics where the media frenzy surrounding Tanya Harding when she allegedly was involved with whacking Nancy Kerrigan, who is barely addressed in this story very intentionally.
Right.
And we'll get there too. But so it's got a lot of buzz.
A lot of buzz.
Margot Robbie, people loved her performance.
Allison Janney.
Queer icon.
Allison Janney's character?
Allison Janney.
Okay.
Allison Janney, queer icon. But I would argue Allison Janney in a fur coat with a parrot, queer icon. Like, easily. So yeah, that's the movie. If you haven't seen it, I would highly recommend seeing it. I think it's such a fun, well-done movie. I love it.
Agree.
The one thing I was surprised about with this movie is, I mean, when they say I, Tanya, they're not kidding. Nancy Kerrigan is, like, left out of this story.
Right.
Which
I
think...
In fact, I don't even think she has any lines except for when she's like, why? After she gets hit.
Exactly. Yeah. No, and then they have whoever the actress that was on set for 2 or 3 days playing the part of Nancy Kerrigan, they just have her basically reenacting news footage. Which is weird because it's like in all like the more recent documentaries about this, there's a lot of talk about how like Nancy was also done a huge disservice by the media, and not as significant as Tanya, obviously, but you know, Nancy didn't do anything. I feel like Nancy often gets framed as like this like prissy bitch.
Uh-huh.
When Nancy, this was like the thing that I was like, oh, they're really not going to mention this in the movie at all. Nancy was just as poor as Tanya Harding.
Mm-hmm.
She was not from an abusive family, but she was also like a blue collar gal who was reframed by the media to not seem like that. And was like held accountable for like, oh, look at this rich bitch when she wasn't. And so that's all I have to say. I just thought it was, she's really glossed over. I mean, this movie is, we're seeing it through Tanya's eyes, and so I guess it's like Nancy's a prissy bitch, but I thought a little more could have been done to just acknowledge that.
May I posit a theory?
Sure.
That this movie is the first of a figure skating extended universe, cinematic universe. And there's going to be an I, Nancy.
Could I play Nancy Kerrigan?
Yes. I cast you.
I'm a brunette from Massachusetts. I could do it.
Yeah.
I could do it.
You've done ballet. Figure skating is ballet on ice, right?
Dude. Exactly.
Please don't send me hate mail for saying that. I feel like there's someone out there.
Are you figure
skating?
No. Figure skating is fucking hard. I couldn't hang. I tried it when I was little. Couldn't do it.
Mm. I got really good at roller skating as a kid.
You're
a
blader?
Not rollerblades. Roller skates.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, they're different.
Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to...
But...
Fuck your life.
I never ice skated until, like, a couple years ago.
Uh-huh.
And some of the skills do transfer over, because all my friends were, like, falling because I'd never, like, roller skated or ice skated before, but I was, like, pretty good beginner. And they were like, Caitlin, how are you so good at this? I'm like, bitch, I roller skated.
You have a lot of interesting hidden talents. You really do.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Should we recap?
Yeah, let's recap. I, Tanya. So it's this cast of actors reenacting both interviews that are like direct to camera,
mm-hmm.
and then also the story events as they unfold.
So every actor we see they're basically playing the same character over the course of almost 3 decades. Like, I think Margot Robbie plays Tanya between ages 15 and 45
right.
in this movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so you see, like, older Tanya played by Margot Robbie in interview style. Same thing with, what's his name? Sebastian Stan.
Hot.
Okay, I know. He's so hot as young Jeff Glooley, as older Jeff Glooley with that weird goatee.
Horrible.
The mustache is better.
He's got a face that works for a mustache. Real life Jeff Glooley did look like straight up disgusting with a mustache. But I mean, this, again, it's like movie hotness of just like, I guess you can just wear that and it's hot. Well, shit. Okay. My favorite performance in this movie, Margot Robbie is awesome. Allison Janney is awesome. My favorite performance in this movie, I have to look up this guy's name because he is like, I think this is his big first like
role. The guy who plays Sean Eckhart?
Sean Eckhart.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Paul Walter Hauser. I hope he's in everything. He was so good.
This is a breakout role for him.
I I hope so, dude. He was so fucking funny.
I know.
And I'd never done like a real deep dive on Sean Eckhart, and I didn't realize how fully delusional he was. And then when they do, at the end, they do like the side-by-side to see how exactly they reenacted interviews. The Sean Eckhart interviews are crazy. It's like, well, I work in covert ops.
Yeah, and counter-terrorism and like, espionage. And you're like, what?
Right. And they're like, Sean, but you don't. And he goes, oh, but I do. And he's like, but we checked and you don't. He's like, oh, but I do. He's so fucking funny. Yeah. And like, I just... Shout out to Paul Walter Hauser, wherever you are. I'm sure you're listening. I just thought he was like brilliant, and I hope he's in everything now.
Yeah,
he was so great.
So, iTanya, the story. Sorry. We follow iTanya through her ice skating career.
Sorry, we follow who?
iTanya. Sorry, her name is iTanya.
iTanya Harding.
We're doing great today.
How are we going to record another episode after this? Okay.
Okay. It's going to be great. We follow Tanya, or as I think she is named, iTanya, through her figure skating career, which starts when she's a soft four, which means three. So we meet her mother, Lavanna, who is, how to describe her? She's overbearing. She is emotionally abusive. She's physically abusive. She is one of those parents who... Oh, look at all the sacrifices I've made for you, and you don't appreciate anything.
She's a very bad parent. We'll hit on this in a bunch of different places, but this movie, people have differing opinions on how this movie does with the topic of class. I think it does pretty well, especially based on the fact that from what I get, and if you know differently, please hit us up. But pretty much every event described in this movie is based on anecdotal evidence and interviews. So it's kind of tricky to make the argument of like, they're making these white trash people look like a joke. And it's like, well, they did confirm that this is what they did. Mm-hmm. Down to like that guy Derek's like running through a fucking pane of glass to get like that really happened. There's footage of that happening.
Whoa.
Yeah. Like all the stuff in the movie basically is stuff that real-life idiots did.
Wait, did it happen where he bashed his head through it? Because he had the baton. He could have broken the glass with the baton.
Oh, I guess that's possible. I don't know. Anyways, the way this movie deals with class, because it does make commentary without changing the story, but I don't know. I mean, I was fortunate to have parents that were not abusive and are great. They're my problematic faves. But I do think it was, like, interesting setting up this dynamic and showing this dynamic that I saw in a lot of my friends growing up of, like, parents in poor communities being too hard on their kids with the implied logic being, like, I need to toughen you up for the world or you're going to end up just like me, which is kind of the message that's kind of Tanya's fear throughout the movie is that she's going to be exactly like her mom and be a waitress, which she is for a while. And it seems like, and it's never explicitly stated, but my takeaway was that, like, Lavanna was basically like, I'm going to be really, really, really hard on you to the point where it is illegal, abusive. I'm going to throw a knife at you. Mm-hmm. But the overarching thing to be like, I have to toughen you up because you're being set up to fail by the world. And that is, like, a parent-child dynamic I've seen before, and I feel like haven't seen a ton on screen, so I thought it was, I mean, it was, like, scary, but, like, I don't know, it worked for me
in this movie. Or if you do see it on screen, I feel like it's often not the main character, it'll be, like, the main character's friend who...
Who needs rescuing or something, yeah.
An example that comes to mind is The Craft, where...
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Right.
And if I thought about it, I'm sure I could come up with others, but...
Yeah, I don't know. Like, so there were certain moments with her where I was like, ooh, that seems like my aunt, or like my friend's mom, of like, some lines I wrote down were like, you were soft, nice makes you shit. Like, basically these repeated enforcement, like, you have to be really tough on yourself and on everyone in your life, or you're not going to survive. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, I see where she's coming from. I don't hard disagree with her approach to literally everything. But I think the more common depiction in media overarching, like, there's so many fucking movies about, like, rich children and their distant parents, not poor children and their overbearing to the point of abusive parents. But I think in the real world, those are just as common.
Right. I mean, so there's, I think it'll take me the whole episode to get through the recap, but essentially, yeah, just, it follows Tanya and her figure skating career starting from a very early age. Mm. She's a standout. She's very good, even at, like,
she's
15.
A stand-up.
She's a stand-up comic.
Crashing season 3, the Tanya Harding story. The marvelous Mrs. Harding.
So she is great. She trains a ton. Her mom does pay for all of her lessons and is supportive in her pursuit of becoming a figure skater.
But again, that's like kind of like another class commentary thing where, like, I think where like children of poor families often feel like they are an investment if they're doing anything extra.
Right.
Where like kids who are from wealthier backgrounds are able to try more extracurriculars and there's less of like a pressure to be like, well, you better have fucking fun.
Supportive in the sense that she was paying for it, that she was right there, but also inflicting a whole lot of psychological warfare on Tanya.
Exactly. It was like, it was basically a contract for abuse.
Yeah.
Of like, in order for you to do the thing that makes you happy, I have to be able to fucking be all out abusive to you at all times. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way she could keep doing it.
Right. So we see Tanya's progress as a figure skater into her teens and early 20s, and this is also around the time that she meets Jeff Galooly. I don't know how old he is when they meet, but she's only 15 and he's probably...
I think he's supposed to be 19 or 20.
Ugh, well, that's upsetting. So they start dating, and then he starts becoming abusive toward her as well, mm-hmm. both physically and emotionally. Her career starts to take off. She starts winning a lot of competitions. Mm-hmm. She moves out of Lavana's home because she's had it up to here with her. So she moves out with Jeff. The abuse continues with him. Like, she's winning national competitions and the Olympics are on the horizon. And then she gets a death threat called on her. And
right. So this is 94. There's like a weird... And this is all historical. It's not weird because it, happened. But, like, there's, like, she goes to the Olympics in 92. She does not deliver. It's implied it's because she's, like, maybe, like, drinking too much and, like, doing stuff.
Gained some weight. Got out of shape.
Which, you know, is a little shamey, but also seemed like there was some truth in that. And that was, like, had to do with why she... Which ties into her abusive relationship with Jeff. Mm-hmm. But she was in an abusive relationship and... was
potentially
not
self-medicating.
Exactly. Like, she didn't deliver at the first Olympics, which would normally be a death sentence, because by the time the next Winter Olympics come around 4 years later, she would be, in theory, too old, which is crazy because she would have been 25.
Right.
But I guess in ice skater years, too old.
Yeah.
But then there's this thing that really happened where they're like, actually, I don't know what the rationale is, but they're like, we're going to have the Winter Olympics again in 2 years. Which would be, like, perfect timing. And so there's kind of this... There's a bunch of great montages in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just, like, a series of really stellar training montages that I really loved.
Yeah.
To heavy-handed music. It was great. So she starts training again. And she's kind of, like, she's got right. it back. She dumped Jeff. She's, like, on a tear. She's doing great. And then she takes Jeff back in the
right, okay, right, exactly. So she takes Jeff back because she's doing competitions and the judges are like, you're just not the image we want to project. We want a wholesome American family. And she's like, I don't have that. So she gets back with Jeff to basically placate the judges and be like, look at this family I have. Because they get married at one point earlier in the story.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like to basically, yeah, project the image that they're going for. And then there's like this big competition that if you place, I forget exactly what it's called, but it's like if you place in this competition, you are considered for the Olympic team. But if you don't place in the competition, you can't be considered for the Olympic team. So high stakes shit.
Yeah. And prior to this, a death threat is called on Tanya, and it freaks her out, and they're like, oh, crap, like, this is gonna ruin my chances, and then this is where, you know, the stories...
This is where Paul Walter Hauser really starts to fucking shine. But he has this idea where, basically, Jeff wants to impress Tanya or somehow, like, I think, honestly, like, get her to be indebted to him a little more so she won't leave him.
Right.
Because that's how he thinks.
Because he's a manipulator. Abusive.
But he's so stupid that he's not even good at it. But like, so he's saying like, oh, it'll improve Tanya's chances if we call in a death threat on Nancy. Mm-hmm. And then Sean, who also called in the death threat on Tanya, we learn later, and that's true. Sean has literally, he's just so fucking, like, he's just smart enough to be extremely infuriating. Because he's like, just smart enough to be like, you should have known better, but whatever.
He's smarter. Is he?
Sean's smarter than Jeff, but that's saying nothing.
Yeah.
Jeff's literally dumb as a rock. So Sean's like, because I think that the movie goes way out of its way to be like toxic, 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 this character. Sean especially. Mm-hmm. His toxic masculinity is kind of uses a punchline over and over in this movie.
Yeah.
Which I hadn't seen it portrayed in other places, but I don't know. I thought it was funny. And I thought it is good to make toxic masculinity, you know, project that as like, you look like a fucking idiot.
Right.
But so he's like, oh, we need to do something to Nancy. And Jeff said, okay, let's mail
write
in
some letters.
Mail death threats, which is like, oh, you're a snail mail a death threat. Incredible idea. Anyways, Sean takes matters into his own hands and plans the fucking whack that the whack heard around the world.
Right. Yes.
Which is carried out by people who are somehow even stupider. It's just a well of stupidity.
Yeah.
That just a gaping maw of idiots.
And how involved Tanya was in the planning and execution of these letter death threats.
That'll be up for question
unclear.
Forever.
Right.
You know, and I'm not even going to bother positing my own theories. We'll never know.
Yeah.
We can hit on this later too, but like, I don't think Tanya Harding is, like, a good or nice person. And I don't think that she's, like, completely telling the truth. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that that makes her story any less valid or interesting or worth telling. But it's, like, I don't know. I mean, it's clear that she knew about some portion of it. I think this movie plays it down perhaps a little too much, but, like, we'll never know.
Sure. So the attack on Nancy Kerrigan's knee happens, and then
I think that the sequence of events is that Nancy obviously can't compete after she's whacked at these trials. Tanya does really well at the trials, places. It looks like she's going to be on the Olympic team. The question is, will Nancy be allowed to be on the Olympic team since she couldn't compete in the prelims? And that part is like, it makes sense that it's left out of this movie, but it is pretty like incredible how she completely, I'm like crying. She totally buckled down, did not pay attention to any of the media coming out, and just, like, had her like, family and support system totally blackballed everyone. It was like, she's training, she's getting better, and in 6 weeks went from, like, whacked knee to, like,
yeah, that recovery time was insane.
It, like, shouldn't have been possible. Like, it is pretty, I just don't think Nancy gets enough credit. I think she's also, she's not as interesting a historical figure as Tanya Harding, but she was pretty fucking cool. So because Nancy's able to do this amazing turnaround, she's allowed on the Olympic team. Mm-hmm. And also because, and I think that this is explicitly stated in the movie too, and has been said by Tanya Harding in interviews, is like, the media who's been like investing all this time and energy into this story is not just going to be like, eh, we're not going to let Nancy compete. Like, people wanted a huge event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the movie ends with, they both compete in the Olympics, both Tanya, both Tanya and Nancy. Tanya does not place. Nancy Kerrigan gets the silver medal. Tanya's skating career is over, also because she goes to court and the judge is like, you're never allowed to skate in any sort of competitions ever again. Mm-hmm. She's like pleading with the judge, please, you have, like, this is my whole life. This is the only thing I know how to do. I don't have an education.
That was like the most impactful part of the entire movie for me. I did not see that. That was like, I felt like one of like the big successes of the movie, because I knew that that was how the story ended, but it never really occurred to me exactly how devastating that was for her, where that was like truly all she had. So if her involvement was as low as the movie would have you believe, that's horrible. And it like, it does show how women are punished.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was, like such a gut-wrenching moment.
It really was.
To watch of like,
that would be, I was thinking, I was like, that would be like if someone told me that I could never do stand-up again, but then I was like, meh.
Yeah, it's like, oh, would that be the worst thing? I'd be like, you know what, I wouldn't cry.
Yeah,
I wouldn't cry.
I wouldn't offer to do jail time instead.
Wouldn't that be hilarious? That's so funny. I was like, I'd rather go to jail than not be able to go to an open mic ever again.
Open mics are prison. Open mic is
jail, so it doesn't.
So then she becomes, we see her like stint as a lady boxer.
I have an autographed picture of Tonya Harding during her boxing days.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm deep into it.
And I only say lady boxer because that's what she calls herself. She's just a boxer. Anyway.
Right. Per her, she's a lady boxer.
Yes. So that's the story. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come right back.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All that available at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Meet Tomboy X. Makers of the original boxer briefs for women, Tomboy X designs gender and size-inclusive underwear and apparel. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com.
There's a lot to digest here. There's a lot to discuss. One of the main points I wanted to bring up was the kind of ongoing theme. She's talking about how figure skating is this sport where, like, the judges want you to be this old-timey version of what a woman is supposed to be. And her sort of recognition of how she was never going to be that because she didn't have the money to afford all the pretty costumes and she chopped wood every morning. So, like, she didn't have just sort of, like, the little delicate frame and everything like that.
That was one thing that I thought could have been touched on a little more.
I agree. In this
movie that I was surprised it didn't, because that is such a big... That informed the direction of her career so much. And I think that was, like, why the people who liked Tonya Harding really liked her, because she, like, she was so athletically good that there was no, you know, like, even though she was not traditionally feminine and, like, had an athletic build, which makes fucking sense for an athlete, but you weren't supposed to have an athletic build, and didn't have a ton of money, but she was so good that people, like, could not deny her, you know, like, that was cool. But it's, we see it a few times. She gets into an argument with judges and says, I'm making my costumes, which is true. She was making, she had so many disadvantages, but they're just like, yeah, you're not really what we're looking for, but you're so good that we can't tell you to go fuck yourself, until they found the first excuse to tell her to go fuck her. And I think that that also directly ties into how she's treated as, you know, she was characterized right away as, like, white trash, who they were looking for an excuse to get rid of her.
Right.
And the second they found one, they got rid of her forever.
Yeah. And it not only her sort of, like, appearance and the way she presented herself physically, it was also, like, from what I gathered, like, her music choices. You know, she did a lot of, like, hard rock and metal. She, like, wore the blue nail polish that her coach was like, no more of that. Like,
dare just... I say she was a product of her fucking environment.
Right,
like,
yeah.
You know? But that's not an environment that that sport respects.
Right, exactly. So, watching this, I mean, I related to her because there's a part where she's talking about how she, like, operates a forklift, chops wood, and works at a hardware store and stuff like that. And I didn't have that exact same experience. But I grew up in a blue-collar family, you know, working class. My dad had a forklift and a backhoe. Part of my chores were to go out into the woods and...
Pennsylvania.
Crazy. Because we lived in the middle of the woods. We would go out in the woods. We would gather firewood. I'd have to, like, load it onto this, like, wagon that was hooked up to the tractor. I had to drive the tractor around.
You're, like, a farm girl?
I'm not a... I'm a woods girl. We didn't have a farm, but we had a woods.
You had wood. There's wood.
There's woods.
There's wood involved.
I had to fucking rake leaves all the time. I had to mow grass all the time. I had to plow our driveway with a 1986.
You had a plow?
We had a 1986.
You know what? I associate Ford plows and libertarians.
F-250 pickup truck that my dad attached a snow plow to. So I had so many physical chores that I had to do all the time growing up. And I resented the hell out of it.
Sure.
Because, like, at school, I was, like, trying to be friends with, like, the popular kids whose parents were doctors and who didn't have to, like, shovel dirt all the time. And I was just like, please no one find out about my home life.
Right.
You know, I was trying to fit in with, like, the quote-unquote, like, what women are supposed to be and what, you know, teen girls are supposed to be interested in and all this stuff. And I was just like, there was just, like, this whole internal struggle that I was, like, going through. But I also was like, it's cool that I can, like, do all this
stuff. It is
stuff.
Cool.
And, like...
But that's not the message the world was sending you.
No.
At that time. I was city poor person, so we didn't do a ton of outside things.
Sure.
But, like...
We're like a city mouse and a country mouse.
We really are. I forget what a country mouse you were.
Yeah.
Like, I have no outdoor skills. But my first, like, full understanding of class in a meaningful way was, it was weird, I wasn't that aware of it growing up because everyone was poor, and I'm kind of grateful for that, where there was a class divide that I thought about a lot when I was watching Lady Bird, of like, there were people who had a, like, more money than us that my parents would be like, oh, just don't act like a fucking idiot around them, you know.
Yeah,
so it's little stuff like that, but I largely didn't become aware of my upbringing being poor until I was in college with a ton of rich kids.
Emerson Richies.
Yeah. And that was like an upsetting experience, where for my entire college experience, I started out by, like, I had to work full time through college, or I would have had to drop out. And for the first half, I would not tell anybody. And I was, like, very embarrassed about it. You know, I would just be like, oh, I'm busy, I can't, like, go to whatever. But it's like, because I was working till 3 a.m. at the scary pizza place run by a sexual predator who I called the police on. But then in the second half of college, I'm really glad that I did, but it's like, I just was like, you know what, rich people are actually trash, and I'm working really hard, and I don't want to be like, it sucks enough having to work these awful jobs, so I'm not gonna, like, hide the fact that I'm doing it. I'm like, whatever, I'm working harder than you, fuck you.
Yeah.
All that to say is, like, she had so much extra stuff to have to do, and she was still one of the best. So the best. And they still didn't want to give it to her. And I totally get that is like that's fucking frustrating to be like, I am working against so much more than the average person, and you're still not, you still won't give it to me.
Which is a thing that, I mean, this is poised as more of a class struggle than a gender one in this movie, at least.
Right.
Because we're only seeing women figure skaters in this movie. There are certainly gender specific things to talk about in this movie, but for her it was more of a class struggle thing.
Yeah.
But I think it is still very much like a parallel situation where women have to work a lot harder to get recognition, to be taken seriously, than their male counterparts a lot of the time.
Right. And then just, like, every time you're in a marginalized group and then you add another marginalization on top of that,
right,
it gets infinitely harder again.
We call that intersectionality.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, queen.
So I enjoyed that this movie at least posed this theme of, like, a woman, her background, her appearance, the way she presents herself, the way she talks, her tastes in things, doesn't align with the quote-unquote old-timey version of what a woman's supposed to be,
feminine,
as per the judges of this sport, and how that was a struggle for her, and how she sort of had to, like, suppress who she was to be able to fit in, but also how she was kind of, like, unapologetically being like, fuck you. Like, there's that scene where...
That's the best.
She tells the judges, like, how am I going to get a fair chance? Like, why do you hate me so much? And they keep saying, like, we also judge on presentation. And then she says, like, suck my dick. And it's like, it's yeah.
So, like, you're like, oh, no. But you're also like, fuck, yeah. That's so cool.
Right.
Like, and she really did that, too. Just, like, so cool. I mean, yeah, I wish that was dug into a little bit more. But I do love that she, I mean, she had, and it comes up a million times, the triple axel is like her secret weapon to be able to stay in mm-hmm. skating because she was the only one that could do it.
Yeah. The movie makes a point several times to say that she was the first woman to attempt and complete it and be really good at it, like ever.
Right. It was her secret weapon.
Secret weapon.
Okay. We would be remiss to not talk about the two central abusive relationships in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
One between Tanya and her mother, the other between Tanya and Jeff. We touched on her mother already, but I did think it was like kind of a different, unusual. And again, it's a biopic, so they are just sort of displaying real alleged events and interactions with them. But it was interesting seeing a relationship between two women where I think that like it's a trope basically where it's like this older character is going to bully their student, as it were, into greatness.
Mm-hmm.
Whiplash is mm-hmm. that exact thing. There's a, I mean, but there's other, I had some written down, but I feel like it's usually, it's either between like a male coach and a male mm-hmm. student, or it's between like a male coach and a female student, and it's a sexualized relationship, which we see in Black Swan.
Mm. Another example of a male coach and a female student is Million Dollar Baby. Yeah. I don't remember that movie super well. I don't think there's any sexual component of their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But at first he's like, I don't train girls. And she's like, I'm the best though. I'm really good. And he's like, okay, fine. I'm Clint Eastwood and all whatever.
Boring.
Fuck Clint Eastwood.
Fuck Clint Eastwood. But like, yeah, but he like kind of, you know, they develop a friendship. But it's like a lot of that movie is him bullying her into getting really good.
Yeah.
It's a dynamic we've seen a lot. We rarely see it between two women. And mm-hmm. that is a component of Tanya and her mom's relationship. And it's abusive. I think it's like more of, you see a more whiplashy kind of relationship.
Yeah.
That was the closest parallel I could think of. There's a couple different scenes where Lavanna just is like, Tanya did her best when she was angry. And so we see Lavanna paying people to tell Tanya she sucks before she gets mm-hmm. on the ice. Like, all this fucking sadistic, manipulative shit with the goal being, and that way she'll do really good. And the other way that she would do that is by withholding praise at any cost.
Yeah.
Where even when, you know, Tanya's landing triple axels, doing stuff no one else can do, it's always, well, this is what you did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And Lavanna is abusive on so many different levels. It's just like, well, which do we pick? She is abusive on like a coachy kind of level,
yeah.
Which is crazy because she can't fucking skate.
No.
But I think even more so than Tanya's actual coach, Diane, who is not great and is very, I think that she falls more in the bucket of like, Tanya, you're not feminine enough.
And right.
That's sort of the space she occupies. But Lavanna is like, you suck, you're bad, and I'm going to tell you you're bad because that'll make you good. And she gets enough results by doing that she continues to do it.
Right.
And it's bad. We sort of already touched on the class component of her abuse, of like making it feel like Tanya owed her something,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think, very common with kids and parents. Yeah, just like a kid feeling like an investment and like they have to do well because their parents are struggling in order for them to be able to do anything, which is an unfair pressure to put on a kid. I don't know. I mean, it is so complicated. The issue of class in America, if you can believe, it's a nuanced, complicated thing. But there's that element. There's also just the element of like, Lavanna is a fucking bad person
mm-hmm.
who wants everyone around her to suffer. And I'd be curious, I mean, we see very little of Tanya's dad in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like they had a good relationship and that he was kind of the beta to Lavanna's alpha, to the point where Tanya says later in the movie, well, you hit dad. I was like, oh, she hit dad.
Yeah.
Okay, that's, you know, an unusual abuse dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemed Lavanna is framed in the movie as a character who, for a number of reasons that are explained, wants everyone around her to suffer.
Right.
and Tanya certainly suffers. And also Lavanna is completely aware that Jeff is abusive towards Tanya and does basically nothing to stop it. And really just makes that one comment in that scene they have together where she says, like, what, I forget the exact wording.
It's like, you're a dumb piece of shit who thinks she deserves to get hit.
Right. Where, you know, we can get the subtext of what she's saying, which is that you don't deserve to get hit. But she's leading with, you're a dumb piece of shit.
But also, she's hitting Tanya.
Exactly.
And then Tanya responds by being like, well, where did I get that idea? The implications of that are obviously like, oh, I think I deserve to get hit because you hit me my entire life.
There's no subtlety in the way that issue's presented. Yeah. But that's, like, good. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there should be, like, shades of gray presented of, like, no. Should this be... like? But it is interesting to me. And Jeff is the less fleshed out character of the two, between him and Lavanna, but it is interesting to see. I think, as of right now, I feel like ultimately it is an interesting and I think kind of impactful choice to characterize an abuser a little bit. And, you know, Alice and Janney, there is a part in the movie where she says, like, my mom was nice and nothing happened, you know, and like, oh, that, yeah. And that's why I amounted to nothing, I think was the implication of, like, nice parents in poor communities raise unremarkable children, seems to be her belief. And that is a moment that reveals so much about that character and who she is. And it's like, do we want to see a three-dimensional depiction of an abuser? In some ways, it's like, you don't really want to introduce a, like, I don't want to be able to empathize with this person. But real life abusers have motivations and have elements, and probably, you know, not every single thing they have done in their entire life is the worst thing ever. And that is something that you struggle with. And that's part of the reason why abusive relationships are so hard to get out of, because people are in them.
Yeah.
And
people.
Right.
I think it's dangerous to depict an abuser in a way that we might be empathetic or sympathetic
to them.
I think it is, though, important to present them as kind of like three-dimensional people, because then we can kind of start to learn, okay, why are you this way? Is there anything about you that can be helped and made to not be that way? Like, because oftentimes, yeah, an abuser depicted in media is just like very one-dimensional. They just are sort of like pure evil kind of thing.
Right.
And we don't understand why they're that way. Or if we do, it's, you know.
Which can be an interesting villain character, but it doesn't, if the objective is to get people to recognize people like this who may exist in their own life, that is not the way to go.
Right, yeah. So I think it was actually, like, pretty responsible on the movie's part to depict Lavanna the way that she was, because she is a fleshed-out character.
But the movie also doesn't absolve her of anything, which is important, and I thought was also effectively done. Do I think there was one moment where I was like, should we be giving this abusive woman laugh lines?
Oh, right. Especially that part where she, it's like whenever Tanya and Jeff's relationship has kind of like taken off and we don't see
Lavanna
for a while. And she's like, well, my fucking storyline's disappearing right about now. And we're all like, tee hee.
Big laugh line. It's like, I don't know. There's some shades of gray there that I'm not totally comfortable with.
Yeah.
But by and large, how she's treated in the movie narrative-wise, I thought was interesting, and if that's the choice they're making to have a three-dimensional abuser, the movie doesn't absolve her. It's clear that what she's doing is in the wrong, but it offers some insight into why that may be, and I thought that was an interesting choice.
Yeah.
We don't get that as much with Jeff. I don't particularly care. Another element of the abusive relationship that I thought was very interesting and ultimately pretty effective was Tanya is the abused in both of these relationships. She's on the receiving end with her mother from the second she emerges from the womb. And then, you know, shortly after, it seems like she and Jeff had like 3 weeks that were really pleasant and then 7 or 8 years that were a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
But I think that, and I need to do more thinking on this, and I want to bring more effective examples to the table in the future. But I feel like, in general, there is this media trend of when women are portrayed as being in abusive relationships on screen, and I think, actually, a recent example would be Nicole Kidman's character in Big Little Lies. Mm. she's abused by her husband pretty brutally in that show. But her character is presented as kind of a perfect character of like, here's this woman who works really hard, does all of her domestic chores, is basically bringing her husband his meal and he whacks it out of her hand and hits her. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing, where we are seeing a depiction of abuse that is like, I mean, it's very hard to watch and it is, I'm sure, realistic to some people's experience. But these flawless women in abusive relationships, I think, is kind of a media trend where it's like, and she never did a whole thing wrong in her entire life. How could this person abuse her? Whereas in Tanya's abusive relationships, Tanya is a very flawed character. She fucks up a lot. Mm-hmm. And there are examples of times where she fucks up in ways that have nothing to do with Jeff or her mother. She fucks up independently, like a person would.
Right.
So again, it's just like showing real people in abusive relationships. There's examples of, like Tanya fucks up a lot in this movie and in her life. And like, it couldn't be more clear that just because you don't even have to like her to recognize that she doesn't deserve this abuse. And I just thought that that was something that I really haven't seen that much of, like, especially a woman in an abusive relationship where she can be a fuck up and she is doing stuff. She's not a perfect person and she's receiving abuse and she doesn't deserve that. Where, seeing a character like that just sort of drew my attention to how rare it is to see a flawed character receive abuse in a way that it's still very clear that it's like, that was something I thought about a lot.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I think that's a symptom of so many movies that do depict an abusive relationship. It's caricatures almost. It's a lot of like archetypes. It's, you know, not real people who are the characters of the story. So they don't seem as fleshed out, or you see the writer being, well, I want to make my character this way. And to me, in some crazy way, that justifies or doesn't the abuse they receive, sort of thing. So they're just like these not real people who the storyteller designs in the way that they think is going to serve their story best. And oftentimes, like you said, it is like the, what's the show called? Pretty Little Pretties?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I like to call it the Laura Dern in an eye patch hour.
Yeah. I'm never going to know the difference between Pretty Little Liars and Big Little Lies.
Two amazing shows. Okay. All you need to know.
So often we do see, you know, a very kind of like perfect, prim, proper woman who doesn't really have any flaws and is the victim of abuse.
I think that that's almost like another way to justify writing a female character that's unrealistically passive.
Yeah.
Yeah, where like the female character receiving abuse is not doing anything wrong in any area of her life and she's punished.
And I think the writers of stories like that are like, look how tragic this is. Or like, look how much she doesn't deserve this. Whereas I think like those same people would be like, oh, but if the character's flawed, it makes her somehow deserve it a little bit more. And that's obviously not the message that anyone should be sending. So yeah, I think it is really interesting that Tanya is depicted as a flawed character and that does not make her deserve abuse.
Just that was like something that really struck me with this movie where it's like, that is so cool. That, and also I think that like, I'm saying it's a trope, right? Like the perfect woman who is abused is also just like lazy writing.
Yeah.
It's easier to not write a character that behaves like a human. But in this movie, that was like one of my favorite elements of it. That was like, cool. Not that I want to see abusive relationships on screen every second of my life, but that was, I thought, like really effectively done.
Yeah.
And they don't spare the audience in the way the abuse is depicted. I mean, it's hard
to watch.
It's hard.
Let's take another break and then we'll come back for more discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Meet Tomboy X. Makers of the original boxer briefs for women, Tomboy X designs gender and size-inclusive underwear and apparel. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com.
But speaking of real people, which is what this movie is about, that brings me to something I wanted to talk about regarding biopics and how most biopics are about men. Mm-hmm. Some of them are tortured geniuses. Other ones are about fucking mediocre as hell men.
Oh, I have a
including The Disaster Artist and Ed Wood.
Throw a fucking stick and you'll hit a man who has somehow had a movie made about his unremarkable life.
So few biopics are about women. I did some quick Googling and found a list of about 20 or so that people have heard of. There's more
over
that
no one's ever heard of. Over the course of film history.
Yeah. A few of the more notable ones include this one, I, Tonya, Frida, Hidden Figures, Elizabeth, The Iron Lady. A lot of these are kind of recent too. Jackie.
Selena.
The Queen. Julie and Julia. And then there's also What's Love Got to Do with It? Selena, Gia, Erin Brockovich.
Monster. Marie Antoinette. Persepolis.
One of my faves. La Vie en Rose. The Passion of Joan of Arc, which is a long time ago.
Oh, that was
The Coal Miner's Daughter. So there's a small handful of biopics about women.
And every other, I mean, and the biopics is such a massive genre. There are so many. Oh, just any loser can have a movie made about their life if they're a man. And often, in the case of Steve Jobs, which, oh my god, if you have not seen the Ashton Kutcher Jobs vehicle, I saw it on my 21st birthday, and it's truly so remarkably bad that you have to see it. If you don't watch Jobs and figure out what the rules to the drinking game is, the movie basically gives it to you. I'm like, every time Ashton Kutcher's just in a field talking about computer, like, what is happening? There's a time where Ashton Kutcher is having an argument through a beaded curtain. You're just like, what is happening?
Yikes.
You gotta watch it. But I won't. But if you look at the list of biopics about women, by and large they're about white women.
Yes.
By and large they're about straight women. By and large they're about women who have had massive success,
mm-hmm.
that have led these amazing lives. From what I can pick out, you know, like, they're mostly triumph tales, with the exception of I, Tonya and Monster. Those are the two I can see on this list that involve a woman failing.
Right.
Pretty bleak.
Yeah.
Folks.
Pretty bleak. And one might argue that, oh, well, there aren't more biopics about women because there aren't more notable
women?
Figures in history. And, well, I would counter-argue, yeah, history is written by the victors, which are
men.
Yeah.
People named Victor.
Victor, specifically.
So history is written by a mean old bitch named Victor.
So there are plenty of And if it seems like there aren't more notable figures from history who are women, it's because they don't get talked about, they don't get written about.
They've been written out.
Or if there are actually fewer, it's because women haven't been allowed to be fucking politicians until 2 seconds ago. It's because women weren't allowed to be any, like, so many things, leaders of any industry, or even allowed in the industry.
I can't wait for IRBG. The RBG movie is going to be fucking tight. Also, there is sort of a weird trend in some of these biopics where it's like, and this is, I think this is a biopic trend overall, but it is maybe because there's so few about women, it's like, ah, come on. There is some that it's like, and at the end she's murdered, where that is several on this list of like, what made her life so remarkable was that she died in a gross, sexy way. And you're just like, ah, fuck, come on. We gotta watch James Franco saw his leg off. And you can't have a movie about Ruth Bader Ginsburg? Grow up. There's movies about fucking civil war, like the wrong side of the Civil War. And there's biopics about Southern generals in the, come on. What are you, how many times is Leonardo DiCaprio going to play someone in the 1920s before I get my Ruth Bader Ginsburg movie? I'm now married to it. That's not to say that there's not good biopics about men. There are. But the fact that there are so many male figures that have more than one biopic about them, that is not a problem that the female equivalent has. You're not finding like, God, which Steve Jobs biopic should I watch? You could literally, there's three of them. There's three of them.
Should I watch Lincoln or should I watch Young Mr. Lincoln?
Fuck.
And that's probably not even all of them. And this doesn't even include all the fucking stupid, like, History Channel documentaries, blah, 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 whatever. Like,
and, I mean, if we go back before,
major release, mainstream Hollywood biopics.
If we go before 1950, I mean, there's a million male biopics about the randomest men in existence. Like, a randomized video game character. They're like, we have to have a 3-hour epic about this amazing man's journey.
May I also just take this opportunity to say that Citizen Kane, which is loosely based on...
Oh, such a drag.
William Randolph Hearst.
Yes.
It's the worst movie I've ever seen. I hate Citizen Kane. Fuck that movie. It's so fucking boring. Hot. Who cares about your fucking sled? Get over it and fuck off.
I don't like Citizen Kane. I don't think it's the worst movie of all time. I dated a guy who was really into Citizen Kane for a while, to the point where he tried to remake Citizen Kane.
Oh, God.
With and you're gonna know exactly who I'm talking about, with prop comedy.
Oh, yikes.
And it was halfway shot before someone told him it was a fucking terrible idea. Which is, like, one of my favorite anecdotes of all time. Because I was complicit in being like, this is a great idea. Everyone thought it was a bad idea. Oh, but people hate telling men that their idea is the worst idea of all time. And that's why so much mediocre male art is out there. Because people love telling women their ideas are bad.
Oh, yeah.
But men, they're like, yeah spend your life savings trying to remake Citizen Kane, you fucking idiot. Oh, boy.
Well, a few other things
I
wanted to mention. We see what has become a trope of...
Oh, I noticed the Caitlin trope.
A woman being good at fixing cars as a way to show her as the... I'm not like the other girls, but in this movie, yes. And there are examples of this where it doesn't feel tropey or it doesn't feel like it's a weird tacked-on trait to make her feel, I'm not like one of the other girls. Mm-hmm. This is an example of a movie that does it well, but like Tanya walks up to Jeff, he's like fiddling around with his truck, and she's like, oh, you gotta do this thing, or blah, 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 and she like reaches in. And
she also has braces.
Has braces.
Ah, it's so cute.
He's like, oh, okay.
Jeff is hot in this scene, and totally... it's like, you don't know what to do with it. You're just like, he's the scene, the part where, and you know, like, if you didn't know he was about to become a historically notorious piece of shit, that story beat when the very heavy-handed Romeo and Juliet begins to play, when he's like, you're so fucking pretty.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, I'm not.
No, I'm not.
You are. And you're just like, kiss. And then end the movie. Yes. And then break up immediately. But that was a nice moment.
I totally believe that she was good at fixing cars just based on her background.
But the fact that they show it.
Yeah. Because it happens again in a... in an episode that we've either just done or is about to come out is Josie and the Pussycats, where it's
That one didn't make sense in the context of the story.
No, not at all.
Like, why?
But Alan Cumming does give a break the fourth wall glance at the camera at one point in the movie.
I cannot wait to record that episode. I'm gonna explode. Like, and it's to a Meatloaf song. It's like that was designed with me in mind. Yeah. I can't even believe. Anyway, okay. I'm shifting. Yeah. Okay. But that's it. Going off of the fact that trope, I would agree that trope is present because that was intentionally shown. But the way this movie, it would have been very easy. I wonder if the director of photography for this movie was a man or a woman. I don't know. This movie is directed and written by a man, which I was surprised at.
Two different men.
Yeah, but this movie, I mean, a movie about figure skaters in general, it would have been a very easy choice to sexualize the way the movie is shot, and it's not shot that way at all. And
totally.
When you see figure skating scenes, you're looking at either Tanya's face to communicate how she's feeling about herself, or you're seeing the athletic focus. You see, like, the triple axel a million times.
Right.
So I thought that was really, I won't say impressive, because that's just how it should be, but...
Agree. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what it should default to. And yet, so many movies shot in such a way where it's, hey, we're shooting this with the male gaze camera, which has magnets that are just on a woman's
male gaze goggles
tits
on.
And ass.
Right, and the way that, I mean, skaters were sexualized in this time would have made it a very easy, cheap choice, and they don't make that choice. And I thought
cinematography
was good.
By Nicholas.
Lots of consonants.
Don't know that last name, but that
I'm
seems
try.
Like a man.
Karakatsanis.
Film editing by Tatiana.
Feminist icon Tatiana Riegel.
Yeah.
She edited Lars and the Real Girl.
Ooh.
I just learned. Anyways, I hope she, I genuinely, just based on all, I haven't seen all the Oscar frontrunners, but this was like the best editing I saw in any movie.
Shot very well, edited very well. Yes, it is a terrific movie.
It is so good.
I mean, not as good as Paddington 2, but.
I mean, I wanted to talk really quickly about the role of toxic masculinity in this story.
Please, yeah.
As it pertains to Jeff, I think we've already sort of covered that relationship a little bit. We don't get to know Jeff very well in this movie, and that doesn't bother me. Mm-hmm. But of the two abusers, we know Jeff far less well. But what we know about Jeff is that when Tanya doesn't behave the way he wants, he hits her. Uh-huh. And he, you know, it's a pretty cut and dry dynamic, and we see that over and over and over. But the moment in their relationship where, and they both acknowledge this in interviews, and I thought the way it was portrayed, like there's that moment where they're like, after the triple axel, everything changed.
Mm-hmm.
Where, to me, that indicated a shift in the power dynamic of, like, when Tanya basically was just growing more confident in her abilities and ability to succeed, their relationship worsens. And to me, I felt like that was a response to a man not feeling in control of the relationship anymore.
Yeah, feeling inadequate or like, oh, this woman is more successful than me, she's better than me.
And because he has a job, but he doesn't have special skills the way that Tanya does, certainly.
Right.
And so we see examples of, like, he's very, on paper, would appear to be supportive in that he is present, he's there.
Yeah.
But you see him taking credit a lot for stuff, and you see him repeatedly asking to be noticed and appreciated for, you know, and it's not wrong to want to be appreciated, but it's absolutely wrong to hate your wife. So, you know, I think that it wasn't a brand of toxic masculinity that we haven't seen displayed, but I thought it was, whatever, effectively presented. Especially for a character we don't know that much about in terms of his background. We know that he's poor.
Right.
He says a little bit about himself, but that's basically all you know. Sean, I think, is a more interesting case study here. And I love Paul so much. I want to be his best friend. Sean is a different kind. It reminded me of that pop culture detective essay about, like, the toxic masculinity of, like, nerdy guys.
Yeah.
Of how sort of for years in movies like Weird Science, where it's like the nerds will rise up and fuck every woman, where, you know, it's presented that narrative of, like, nerds don't get to have sex with girls, and
what a massive travesty, and they should be allowed to enact, they should allowed to be just as shitty to women as popular guys.
Ugh, I just watched 16 Candles last night for the first time. You were, I won't fully get into triggered. It, but my God, is that the worst movie I've ever seen?
I think we should do it. We should do a John Hughes special because it's despicable. But presenting toxic masculinity as a punchline was like another very deliberate choice this movie makes that I thought worked really well. There mm-hmm. were some moments where I was like, he's doing violent, terrible stuff. But by and large, I think presenting that character as a fucking joke, who literally, I mean, he's speaking in like pretty broad strokes of like, I'd never do anything wrong, cut to like him doing something wrong.
Yeah.
That was another great Paul Walter, that when he's in the back of the car, he's like, they'll never break me.
Yeah. Cut to a montage of him just bragging about, the Nancy Kerrigan thing? Yeah, that was me and my crew. And it's like,
And also he lies like five times. He's like, I got paid $65,000. I'm like, no, you didn't. What are you talking about? It's just like, it was, oh God. I mean, I think that the way that character is presented was really interesting choice that maybe won't work for everyone, but I thought it was a way that we don't see toxic masculinity displayed a lot that can be effective.
True. Yeah, I agree. Another couple things I wanted to point out about her abusive relationship with Jeff is that at one point, you know, she says, you know, I thought it was my fault that he was hitting me. That I just thought was interesting just to have it be pointed out, because that's such a common thing for abuse victims to feel, because their abuser is often also extremely manipulating and makes them feel as though it is their fault. And the fact that it even gets said, I thought was important.
Moments like that, like, this is weird to say, but like, I wish that this movie had come out when I was a teenager.
Mm.
Because there's so much presented here that is presented really explicitly and directly, even when they're like painful truths to be very direct about. But I'm like excited for like young girls who are seeing this movie and can hear these messages stated so clearly. Like, that's awesome.
Another good message that I think the movie sends is it starts with, you see like a tiny, tiny scene of her stepbrother, Creepy Chris.
She's
this guy was living with me at the time, and I remember my first date with Jeff because I had my creepy stepbrother arrested that day, because you see a scene where he comes up and gropes her and like fondles her breast, and then she like
takes him down,
flings him down and calls the cops on him and like has him basically arrested and kicked out of the house. And then there's a number of other times in the movie where she calls the cops on Jeff.
And nothing is done.
And has restraining orders filed against him. Done. He often violates them. They even get divorced, because they get married and then divorce, but she takes him back after that. He shoots her.
Nothing is done.
A cop pulls them over, pretends sees to her not bloody know face. It. Yeah, and then while he's kind of talking his way out of it in the background with the cop, you see another scene where Tanya's directly addressing the camera, she's saying like, he can talk his way out of anything.
Never
the
talk
cop
to
just
him.
Left me there. Like, it was, I mean,
well, yeah, how women are disservice when you can't make the argument that she didn't try to get out. She did.
She did. But, you know, the abuse cycle.
The last thing I wanted to talk about was the media aspect of it.
Yes.
Which feels especially relevant right now.
Uh-huh.
Of a lot of the reason this story unfolded the way it was for ratings and for, you know, there is that side of it. But ultimately it was that people just didn't believe Tanya. Like, they did not believe what she was saying. I think this movie makes a really great point of like, her whole life no one believed her. Even when she was saying over and over, like, this is the abusive relationship I'm in. This is how my class is getting in the way of me achieving my goals. Say what you will about her, she's a very direct character.
For sure.
And person. And she's just kind of shoved aside, and reasons are found to dismiss her. And sometimes even including, like, the fact that she's very direct is used as a reason to discredit her.
Yeah. It's like, you're too blunt.
It's trashy.
It's not blunt. Classy.
Right. And the ultimate message being that, like, people just didn't believe what she was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of ways that people were biased and prejudiced against her that informed that reaction. You know, like, there's certainly a lot of gray area in this story, but that she was done a huge disservice
mm-hmm.
by the media that ended up robbing her of a career that it seemed like people always wanted to rob her of anyways.
Right, yeah.
It just, yeah.
There's a line that she says in the movie, she's talking about Nancy Kerrigan, and she says, "The press wanted Nancy to be the princess and I to be the pile of crap to sell papers." So right. Basically they had decided, even though they came from similar economic backgrounds, Nancy and Tanya,
mm-hmm. which the movie should have said.
But because Nancy was maybe not as crass and maybe a little bit more refined in her appearance, and the press just held on to that and were like, yeah, Tanya is white trash, forklift driving welder lady who's like, ugh, gross. And right. her competitor, of course, they were...
Well, the thing is, like, that sucks is, like, Nancy was from a similar background, but she just, she was willing to play ball, as it were,
yeah.
by not really saying anything
yeah, she was
about
kind
her
of,
background. Yeah. She was very, like, old interviews with her. They're just, you know, in the way that you see a lot of teenagers who come to prominence and stay there, she's not really saying that much. She's saying, like, she's thanking people. She, you know, she's not stating her opinions uh-huh. as much as Tanya is. And I think that, like, there is a big element of, like, people wanting her to apologize for something that she does. She's an unapologetic person. And people did not like that.
Right.
And we've hit on this before of just like an unapologetic man. Sky's the limit for those types of characters.
Yeah.
And a lot of biopics, that is like the center of it. Like mm-hmm. he'd never apologize for doing what he thought was right.
Yeah.
And that's what we see Tanya doing. And, you know, you can see the real historical result is that her life was ruined because she wasn't willing to play ball and
yeah.
was unapologetic about who she was.
I don't know if this is an appropriate parallel to draw, but remember when Mike Tyson bit off someone's ear and everyone's like,
that's badass.
Oh, Mike Tyson. Oh, slap on the wrist. But actually, you can still be in the public eye and you're like, what a silly guy. And did it. And
I think that ties back to like the femininity issue of like the sport she was in of just
yeah.
like she wasn't supposed to be tough in that sport. She's supposed to be traditionally feminine.
Yes.
And there was no wiggle room.
But then also just the way that, like, the press and media treated both cases where, like, Tanya was to some degree involved in violence against Nancy Kerrigan and Mike Tyson was no doubt involved with violence.
There's no way around. There's video footage of it.
By biting his ear off. But you know, he got some shit for a while, I remember. But now, like, Mike Tyson, you can see him in movies. Like, he's still...
Yeah, check out... Or please, God, don't watch The Hangover. But,
yeah,
like...
exactly. Like...
Huge.
He's still a person that people... Yeah, and often he's the butt of a joke. But the fact that he's still...
But honestly, that was... That ended... I'd argue that ultimately that was a boon to his career.
Yeah. Whereas with Tanya, it was easier to villainize her mm-hmm. because of the patriarchy.
That
and
little
she...
shifty patriarchy
oh.
back again.
Oh,
we thought we got it last time. Recommended viewing for people who enjoyed I, Tanya. First of all, watch the 30 for 30 documentary.
Mm.
It's made by, I forget what her name is, but a really great documentarian. Also, I think it is relevant that the source material for this movie was curated and presented by a female filmmaker. Really, really, really good. And then follow up, I would watch the Netflix documentary about Amanda Knox, where you'll find a similar story of, I mean, there's no limit to the stories of women being victimized in media. That's why our show exists. But in terms of like real life stuff, Amanda Knox, the story being that she was accused of murder when it was clear very early on that she did not do it, and it was done by someone else who admitted to it. But for years, it was like, did she do it? And it was pushed by the media. And I think that this movie pulls from that a little bit because there's that shitty media guy that we see in the talking heads over and over who's
yeah.
like, hee, and I popped her tires. Like, that seemed like almost directly pulled from, there's like this British tabloid journalist in the Amanda Knox documentary who couldn't be more thrilled with himself for ruining her life, and I just want to shoot him. But recommended viewing.
Yeah.
Hey, does this movie pass the Bechdel test, I wonder?
It certainly does.
It for sure does.
You've got LaVonna and the coach talking. You've got Tanya and the coach talking. You've got LaVonna and Tanya talking to each other. You've got, we didn't talk about this character, but Tanya fires Diane, her first coach, and then hires someone named Dottie or something.
And then she fucks up the 92 Olympics, Diana ends up coming back.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With that great scene at the diner where Tanya's like, well, I'm just like my mom. I'm a waitress. I'm poor. I'm out of shape. And the good news is I also am unskilled. I was like, that was fun.
That was fun. But yeah, I mean, the movie passes dozens of times. It's not even worth counting how many because it's
no, this movie is tons. From moment one, women take up the screen for the majority of the movie. And again, it is worth saying it's 95% white women.
Yeah.
Again, tricky. It's a biopic. Tricky. Mm-hmm. We're in Oregon for most of the movie, but worth saying.
Oregon, which was founded as a white supremacy state, if you didn't know.
Didn't know.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah. Well, they wouldn't even let black people live there until sometime in the 1920s, I want to say.
Well, that explains and it was what like, a white state it is.
Yeah, it was founded as like, this is going to be a white haven for any white people who want to live here and not be around any people of color.
I did not know that. That makes sense of every place I've ever seen in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Very white.
Fucked up, man.
Shall we rate the movie?
Yes.
I'm going to give it a 5 nipple, I think.
I think I am too. No. I'm going to give it 4.
Okay.
Because, and I know it's about Tonya Harding. But I do think that Nancy was
robbed.
Was villainized. She's in Robbie'd. This.
Margot.
She's Margot Robbie'd. I think she was, and I understand why this choice was made, but I don't like it. She was villainized in this story that she was not. She couldn't be less of a villain or even a willing participant in.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that there were several small opportunities to flesh her out a little bit, but the movie shows no interest in giving Nancy's character any dimension, that really did bother me. However, every other woman we see on screen is flawed, has motivation. Just, I don't know, just like a lot of human women are shown in this movie and are shown together and are shown in conflict, are shown not in conflict. Kind of everyone in this movie is in conflict at all times.
Yes.
Regardless of gender. Pretty much without exception.
Yeah.
Down to the fucking, we didn't talk about this, where we think we're getting a reconciliation scene with Tanya and her mom, and they're like, nope, she's being paid by someone to get report. Tanya to admit she did something that she may not have actually done. Amazing. But yeah, I mean, I think that this movie is terrific. I just wish justice for Nancy, baby. Nancy, to her credit / to my low-key fury, still to this day, has no interest in talking about it.
Hmm.
They're like, have you seen Tanya? She's like, nope.
Wow.
She will not talk about it. She has no interest. I mean, and it's weird because Nancy Kerrigan ended up kind of making a killing off of this incident. Although, obviously, she was not, again, she's not a willing participant in this.
Right.
But she did make that amazing comeback. And then off of that amazing comeback, she won second place, made a face, which I'm just like, that's the only time we've seen Nancy Kerrigan behave human. Is that because she was so like conscious and perfect. And then when she was just like kind of, there is like a great clip when Nancy Kerrigan gets the silver medal in the Olympics where the girl who wins, like a Russian girl, is like taking a while to get off the ice because she's crying so much. And Nancy's just like, there's like a clip of Nancy Kerrigan being like, why are we going to are we just going to keep filming her crying? And I was like, okay, fine. She's a person, you know?
In fact, I liked it. First of all, I make faces all the time. I always have a scowl on my face. So, and also, that's basically telling a woman to smile. Smile. You look prettier when you smile.
She lost. That sucks. After all she went through, like, she frowned.
Mm-hmm.
But the movie casts her as in, I mean, Tanya
casts
her as in the wrong for doing that. And the movie makes no commentary on the fact that that is probably a little petty of her because, you know, Nancy... Anyways, clearly I'm a Nancy stan. I love her.
Yeah.
I love Tanya too. I love this movie.
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with my 5 just because I don't have the same emotional investment.
Freakish attachment to Nancy Kerrigan.
Nancy Kerrigan as you do. So I just thought it was great that what feels like, because they actually are, real people depicted, because other biopics will be about a historical figure and totally gloss over them and make them not
That Tom Hanks movie about Walt Disney. Also, that Tom Hanks biopics are fucking problematic. Charlie Wilson's War is an atrocity to nature. Charlie Wilson was like a senator, I'm pretty sure, who literally the whole movie is like, he's abusing women and it's fucking cool. Tom Hanks in biopics, no more. The Post, fuck off.
Well, an example I saw recently was The Greatest Showman, which is the worst movie I've ever seen. I did go to see it because Zac Efron is in it, and that's my cross to bear. But that movie totally glossed over all the horrible shit P.T. Barnum did in his life and does not depict him as an interesting or compelling or multidimensional character the way that Itania does. So Itania was very responsible in presenting these characters, flawed as they may be, as dynamic, multi-dimensional characters and people, and exploring things that movies don't often, if they do explore, they don't go into enough depth about or make any real statement about, which is, you know, class struggles and abuse and the media's portrayal of women and things like that. So
it tackles a lot.
It tackles a lot, and I think it does it all, for the most part, pretty responsibly. And on top of that, it's just, you know, a woman's story. It's a woman driving this story.
And it's a fun movie. It's good. Yeah. Because there is kind of like sometimes a tendency of, even in movies that fare well with the Bechdel test and portrayal of women, of like, yeah, we're seeing strong female characters, but we're not seeing strong, flawed female characters.
True.
And that's something this movie does very well.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, I give it a 5 nipple, and my nipples go to, I think that Sean Eckhart has 8 nipples.
You think he's a cat?
I think he's a cat.
How great would it have been if Alfred Molina was in this movie? Can I just say, there's not really any older male parts in this movie, though, so it might have been impossible. And also, how amazing is it that there's no older male parts in this movie? So Alfred Molina, unfortunately, I mean, he's a feminist icon. He posted a thirst trap along with a caption that's like, donate to Time's Up. And it's like, what, bitch? But like, I love it. You're giving Sean Eckhart 5 nipples?
5 nipples.
I'll give him 2 of mine, which brings up his count to 7. And so maybe he just like, he's got like a spare time. Because I can't wait to see Paul Walter Hauser in every movie that comes out from now on. I literally can't wait to be tired of him. And I'm giving my other 2 nipples to Nancy, sorry.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And I also think that I look more like Nancy Kerrigan than the girl who played her in the movie. I'm just throwing it out there.
Okay, sure.
So, like, all the casting agents who are patrons on our Patreon feed, can't wait to play Nancy Kerrigan.
Well, that was the episode, folks. Thanks for listening.
Yes.
I had given the, I didn't remember this, but I had given the movie 5 nipples. And Jamie, you had given it 4. I think I wouldn't necessarily give it 5. If we like, well, were to do the episode
Caitlin
today.
Backpedaling on her nipple rating again.
Caitlin, backpedal Durante strikes again.
I don't know. Maybe I would still give it. I might even score it a little lower. I don't know. Maybe it would still be around a 4 for me, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think I would drop it down to like a 4.5 for the reasons that you cited in the episode. I was too gung-ho about it, I guess. I was just like,
wee! To be fair, it had just come out and we were all excited. We were like, Allison Janney's going to win that Oscar. And then she did.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I feel like, oh, and I want to say on a final note that I think in the 2.5 years since, this movie has kind of slipped out of the zeitgeist in a way I do not like. I feel like people don't talk about Itania really at all. And
I feel like it's you and Demi Adejuyibe are the only people talking about Itania, and we need to fix that.
Me and Demi's text thread is pretty much all about Iton, like it's just like watching it again. Like it's just, we're both watching it a lot.
He and I have a similar text thread about Paddington. So yeah. That makes sense.
Demi is that friend because he's just, yeah. He's a man of passion. But I would encourage you, if you like Itania, tell someone who hasn't, it's on Hulu for crying out loud. It's not hard to watch Itania.
It's so accessible.
Just bring it to your friends. Bring it to your loved ones. They deserve it. Okay, I'm getting off my soapbox.
Also, Jamie, I can't believe we went through that entire episode and you never mentioned anything about Zambonis.
Which is, that is for a reason. One of my only notes. Not a Zamboni in the whole movie.
Not a damn Zamboni
in sight. Which is, first of all, erasure.
Zamboni erasure.
Zamboni erasure. There's for sure. And like Tanya Harding is like, she's like a working class hero. She would be talking to the Zamboni drivers. She would be forging lifelong friendships with the Zamboni drivers.
I bet she knows how to drive a Zamboni and operate one.
Now I want to just quote the whole movie again. She does chop wood every day. She does drive the Zamboni every day.
Yeah.
That would be, I mean, that would just be, if this were a fictional story, they're like, well, yeah, Tanya pays for her lessons by driving the Zamboni, which is something that I would do for anything, for free.
Oh, sure. Like, to refer to a recent episode on the Cheetah Girls, when the one character works at the community center to pay for her dance lessons. It could be just like that.
That's a very common way to get children to do labor they shouldn't necessarily be doing. I did the same thing for dance classes in high school. They're like, oh, to help teach the little kids, and then we'll look the other way. And you're like, look the other way? I'm doing a job. Anyways,
yep.
Itanya rocks. She should have been on a Zamboni. Also, I've ridden a Zamboni. End.
Well, fiend. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. You can follow us on social media at Bechtelcast on Twitter and Instagram. Really be sure to follow those accounts, because that's where we post, you know, certain events that we have.
Maybe you were hanging out on our Titanic live stream last week. We're hoping to do more of those, so just stay in touch. Don't be a stranger. You can join our the episode you heard unlocked today was from our Patreon, aka Matreon, where for $5 a month you can get 2 bonus episodes a month, as well as access to our back catalog, which is over 70 episodes, I think, at this point. So there's just, if you're running low on main feed, it's a great place to go, and it's also a great community. You can get our merch at tpublic.com/thebechtelcast. There's just options upon options upon options of ways for you to form parasocial relationships with us.
You should make an Itanya design for merch.
Okay. Don't tempt me.
Also, I wanted to pitch this.
Oh, go for it.
A crossover of I, Tanya and I, Frankenstein. What if they exist in the same universe?
We should honestly, now I'm like, should I change my other birthday Patreon episode to I, Frankenstein? Honestly.
Wow.
Something to think about.
I would.
I, Frankenstein is... There was 2 perfect movies combined. It couldn't be done. Oh God, I love I, Frankenstein so much. Like the scene where he's on top of the mountain and he's just swinging around nunchucks, but there's no one there. I love it.
I simply don't remember. I think I've seen it, but I don't remember anything about it.
Aaron Eckhart really wishes that you didn't remember anything about it.
I would gladly record a bonus episode on it, though, if that was your birthday wish.
Maybe that's the move. About to make my wishes come true.
Wowie. All right. Well, thanks again, everyone. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women. Tomboy X designs gender and size inclusive underwear and apparel. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase, only at tomboyx.com.